Coming up today on The Balanced Word, knowing that you'll live forever will enrich your life in a wonderful way.
If God is powerful and loving, why does evil exist? And there are a whole lot of people who reject Jesus completely and reject the idea of God. And anytime you see an atheist debating, it's one of the first places they go. How come if you have a good, powerful God, he lets this kind of stuff happen? Well, this story isn't going to solve that, but it might help some. Because in this one little microcosm of life, we see that, yes, he did love. And yes, he did have the power to heal. But what he ended up doing by not healing turned out to be something even way more amazing and way better.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped.
If we were to look back at our lives, we could see peaks and valleys all over the place. Who could forget those times, like our wedding day or graduation? Then there are the unforgettable valleys, the death of a loved one, economic hardship. We all experience hard times, but as Christians, there is someone we can turn to for comfort and help. We're about to look at the death and resurrection of Lazarus and learn how to live and view life as God would have us. Pastor Dave Rolfe will also point out what belief and trust in God looks like. So if you would, turn to John chapter 11 as we bring you The Balanced Word and a message called Lazarus, Life and Death.
Today, this week, we've come to John chapter 11, which is, it's a great chapter. It's a story, it's the story of Jesus bringing Lazarus back from the dead. I love this story. I think about it every time someone who I know dies, or every time I do a funeral for somebody whose their loved ones are around. The idea that somebody could be in the grave and then called up and come back to life is something that you can't help but think, wow, I wish I had that kind of power. Sometimes, and one of the questions this week for our small groups is, if you could bring someone back from the dead, who would you choose and why? But it's fun to just fantasize about that. But let's look at the story, because this is real. It really happened, and it happened for reasons. John chapter 11, beginning with verse 1, a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her son Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. So the sisters sent to Jesus and said, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. Mary and Martha, Mary would later in the Gospel of John, we'll see she anointed Jesus' feet with oil, as it mentions. They lived in Bethany. They were really good friends of Jesus. When he was down in Judea, down near Jerusalem, he would often stay at their house, which is a couple miles away from this downtown city of Jerusalem. Lazarus, who was a good friend of Jesus's, was sick and must have been very sick. And they had seen Jesus heal all sorts of people before. So it was a natural thing. Hey, Jesus, please come and pray for our brother. We've seen you do this for other people, and I know that you love him. He's sick. And verse 4, though, when Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death. This is no emergency, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. He wasn't just being casual or like, yeah, it's no big deal. It sounds like a personal problem. He loved them dearly, but when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. He's not in a hurry to get there, and it's weird, and it's weird for them. They got a message to him, hey, Lazarus is really sick. Please come and heal him. It's real serious. And he's like, yeah, okay. I love you guys, but I got a couple things here I want to do. A little bit of hanging out. And I think for the disciples, they probably thought he was afraid to head back down by Jerusalem because those people wanted to kill Jesus. But it says that, you know, he loved them, but he waited for a couple days. And then after that, he said to the disciples, let's go to Judea again. Let's head down. And the disciples said to him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you. Last time we were down there, you're going there again? See, they figured he was delaying because he didn't want to go down there and get killed. It actually would be his last trip down south before he would be killed, but they didn't know that. And Jesus answered kind of a weird way in verses 9 and 10. Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he doesn't stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if one walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. Kind of a weird parable that basically means this. Look, when it's daytime, you move. When it's nighttime, you stop. I'm not going to break that rhythm. You mess yourself up when you do that. And in other words, if my time is here, if this is the time, then it's fine. If my number's up, my number's up. If it's not, it's not. But I'm not going to run and hide. I'm just going to do what it is that I'm going to do when I'm going to do it. These things he said in verse 11, and after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. He's like, yeah, he's just sleeping, and I'm going to wake him up. And the disciples said, come on, if he sleeps, he'll get well. This isn't an emergency anymore if he's just asleep. However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. So Jesus made it really plain. Look, I said he's sleeping, but I mean he's dead. This isn't just a wake-up kind of thing. It's more than that. But he says, and I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let's go to him. So he goes, there's something good that's going to come out of this, and we're going to go there even though it's too late by most people's standards. And then Thomas, who is called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's also go that we may die with him. Thomas is such an interesting character. Remember when Jesus had risen from the dead and the disciples saw him, but Thomas wasn't there. Thomas was the guy who goes, I'm not going to believe it until I see the wounds in his hands, the wound in his side. And so we typically call him Doubting Thomas. But really, Thomas should be called Realistic Thomas. Because he's like, if we're going down there, he's going to get killed. If we're with him, we'll be killed too, but let's go. Wouldn't you love to have a friend like that? That goes, okay, if you're going to die, I'm going to die with you. Let's go for it. But that's Thomas. So when he came, you know, he got word before he got to Bethany. He heard that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. Now, Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away. And in verse 19, many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. In those days, when somebody died, even if they were a close friend or not, you'd tend to gather together and wail really loud and mourn. It was thought to be, you know, help people not to feel like they're alone. And so it was a big, you know, crying party when someone died in those days. But Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Remember, Martha was kind of, it's said to be Martha's house. She was the one who always took care of the house and was all busy, and Mary was the more contemplative one who would just sit at Jesus' feet and listen to him. But when Martha got to Jesus, she said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. She starts off by saying, this is kind of your fault, you realize. If you had been on time, my brother would be alive right now. The way I'm feeling, you didn't do what you could have done. You didn't come, and it would have been so simple, but you just didn't do it. What in the world did you have that was more important than Lazarus to you? And so kind of a nice kind of accusation. But then she says in verse 22, even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. She didn't say, I know you could raise him from the dead. She just says, I don't know, even now, maybe, who knows, maybe there's something that you could, you know, if you would pray that God would do. So Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Her theology was pretty good. She goes, I get it. Someday he's going to rise from the dead. I know in the sweet by and by, pie in the sky, by and by, someday in heaven, I know I'll see him again. But that's not really helping me right now. That just is a religious statement that we understand, yes, there's a resurrection. That's supposed to make me feel better now? And Jesus said to her, you need to understand, it's not just that there will be a resurrection. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, even though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Do you believe that death only looks like death? It's not real. Do you believe that this is all about me, that I am the resurrection and the life? Not just that I will bring about a resurrection, but that it's about me, that I am the resurrection. Do you believe it? And she made a good theology statement that probably she had learned from Peter. She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." Similar statement when Jesus was talking to the disciples and saying, "So who do people say that I am?" And they threw out a lot of theories. And he goes, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter said, "You are the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus said to him, "Wow, flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you. That's special." So they all probably kind of memorized it. Ooh, this is the one time Peter said something that was actually from God. And so, no offense to the Pope, but, you know, so she says the same thing. And it's a good, solid theological statement. You're the Messiah. You're God. You're the Son of God. And so she makes this statement as like, yeah, I believe this. When she had said these things, she left. She's like, I'm not getting anywhere with them. So she decides to send Mary, who I think Martha always suspected that Jesus liked Mary better than her, because like Mary just would sit at Jesus' feet while Martha was doing dishes. So she like goes to Mary and she says, "Hey, Jesus is asking for you." He's still not at Bethany yet. And so I think Martha probably made that up, you know, that it doesn't say that Jesus said it. It says Martha said it. "Hey, Jesus is wondering where you are." So then Mary goes and says, she heard it and she got up quickly and came to Jesus when Jesus hadn't yet come into the town, but he was in the place where Martha met him. And verse 31, by the way, the Jews who were with her in the house comforting her, when they saw her get up in a hurry and leave, they followed her, saying, "She must be going to the tomb to weep there. Let's not miss this." Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." She uses the same statement. It's like, look, my sister and I have been talking about this, and we kind of think this is your fault. We kind of wonder, what did you do that was so important that you missed the opportunity to heal our brother? It was not just a flippant statement. It was a statement of pain going, you could have made a difference, and you didn't. And so when Jesus saw her weeping so hopelessly, and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. That word groan is like the snort of a workhorse, just, you know, just, and he was troubled, meaning this was really bothering him and upsetting him. And so he says, look, where have you put his body? Where have you laid him? And they said, well, Lord, come and see. And then it says Jesus wept. One of the only times that it says that Jesus cried. There was like one other time where it would sort of imply that when he's looking at Jerusalem right before he died. But you can have a long discussion about why did Jesus cry? Why did he cry at this thing? When you understand the flow and the context, it's hard for me to think that, oh, he was just crying with them, or he was sad about Lazarus dying too, because he knew what he was going to do. He was about to bring him back from the dead. Now, if somebody was crying, and I was there and I knew that what they were crying about wasn't real or is just about to be fixed, I wouldn't just go, oh, let me cry with you to make you feel better in your agony. I'd want to relieve the agony. If I knew somebody who said, you know, I lost my job and they're crying, and I knew somebody that wanted to hire them, I wouldn't go, oh, yes, it's horrible that you lost your job. I would go, look, here's a better job. It's there. All you have to do is make this call and you've got it. So there's something about his crying going along with him being troubled and him groaning that I think there's more to it than that. Some people have suggested that, you know, he was crying for sympathy. Like I say, it's hard for me to buy that. Some people say he was just crying because he thought about how much death happens in the world, how people dying and why the sin. Other people think he was crying because he knew that he was about to face death and take all this sin upon himself, that was something that made him cry. But you can make up your own theory because there's nothing definitive that, you know, you can believe it was pollen and allergies. It doesn't matter. But it says he wept. That's the shortest verse in the Bible, by the way, John 11:35. When we were kids, if you had to memorize a verse, that's the one we would memorize. But then the Jews said, see how much He loved him. See how he loved him. And so they looked at it and went, wow, he's crying. He really loved Lazarus. But then some of them go, why didn't he heal him then? He's opened the eyes of the blind recently. And so why in the world did he not come and keep this guy from dying? So they're kind of blaming him too. They're confused. He loves him, but he didn't do anything. What's up with that? And then in verse 38, Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, ever practical, said, Lord, it's going to stink, man. He's been in there for 4 days. And Jesus said to her, didn't I say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? They took away the stone from where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. Now, he's praying out loud, but he's really praying for the benefit of the people who were witnessing this. He said, I know that you always hear me, but because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. I'm doing this, Father, because I want them to believe in me. Now, when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out, bound hand and foot with grave clothes. His face was wrapped with a cloth. In those days, they would bury you like a mummy. He's got all these bandages all around him, his face all wrapped up, and he's like hopping up. And he's like, untie this guy. Turn him loose so that he can get out of here. And so they did it. Jesus, again, had thanked the Father in advance, and he said, loose him and let him go. And then in verse 45, many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did believed in him. But others of them went and ratted him out to the Pharisees. Hey, Jesus is doing it again. He raised a dead guy. And so the chief priests and Pharisees got together and said, what shall we do? For this man works many signs. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him. And the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation. Instead of going, whoa, a dead guy's alive, they're like, this is really going to mess up our gig. Once this word gets out, everybody's going to believe in him. Now, they were sort of naive because a whole lot of people saw it and not necessarily believed, including the guys that came and told the Pharisees. But their concern was, if he just keeps doing this, this is going to mess us up. And then there's an interesting story about the chief priest who at that point just like says this thing about, you know, we need somebody to die for all the people. And they're like, what? And he's goes, did I say that? It was just God just spoke it through him. Later in the next chapter, it says that Lazarus is telling everybody about what had happened, maybe even describing what it was like in heaven. And so as a result, all kinds of people were believing in Jesus because of Lazarus' witness. And as a result of that, the Jews were like, let's kill Lazarus. It's kind of hard to really threaten a guy who's already been dead. And you're like, we're going to kill you again. But, you know, that's how the story kind of unfolds. So when you look at it, I mean, it's an awesome story of a miracle. It definitely shows us the power of Jesus. But as I look at the story, there's a mixture of, when it comes to the people, there were some things that they were spot on about. There were some things that they were absolutely correct in. But in some of those same areas, they were also a little off. And so you look at it, it's like, yeah, you're right about that, but on the other hand, you're also wrong about that in a different way. And so as I look through the story, let me float just a few ideas at you in terms of where they were right and where they were wrong. Because if this story was there to change us, we need to look at our own lives and go, where would I be more like them and less like what Jesus wanted them to be? He was doing this to fix something. He was doing this to help them believe. So the first thing is, they were confused, but they were right about the fact that Jesus was loving and that Jesus had power. They believed that he had healed people, and they believed that he loved. Certainly, when Mary and Martha sent the message to Jesus, they're like, the one that you love is sick. I know he's special to you. I know that he matters to you. And then later, these Jews who were there looked at Jesus and like, wow, look at how he loves them. But at the same time, it was a feeling of, but why doesn't he do something about it? So it was a combination of, I see his love, I know his power, but how come if he loves and can do something, why doesn't he? You know, remember, and it's interesting where when he first heard about how sick he was, that it says that Jesus loved them, so he didn't go for 2 more days. He told them that, look at verse 5, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. His delay was because that he loved them. But for them, for Martha, for Mary, for the other people, Martha and Mary, like, you could have done it. And I know you love us. So why didn't you? And those Jews who were following along were like, he can do stuff. You know, he's healed blind people. And look, he really loves them. So how do you explain that he loves and that he has power, but he doesn't do what we think love would do with power? It's a timeless question that we all wrestle with. In one way or another, it's something that's been wrestled with forever. Sometimes we describe it as the problem of evil. Like, if God is powerful and loving, why does evil exist? In a philosophical sense, there's a word called theodicy, T-H-E-O-D-I-C-Y, that means, how do you figure out? Literally, it means God and justification. And it's like, how can you justify a loving, powerful God who lets the world look like this? And there are a whole lot of people who reject Jesus completely and reject the idea of God. And anytime you see an atheist debating, it's one of the first places they go. How come if you have a good, powerful God, he lets this kind of stuff happen? Well, this story isn't going to solve that, but it might help some. Because in this one little microcosm of life, we see that, yes, he did love. And yes, he did have the power to heal. But what he ended up doing by not healing turned out to be something even way more amazing and way better. Lazarus conquered his fear of death forever. Mary and Martha knew that he could do absolutely anything. All the people who were watching, it was amazing. Had he gone and just healed them and he got up and went, that wouldn't be that big of a deal. They had seen greater things. They had seen blind people from birth who were healed. So Jesus actually didn't do what they wanted him to do, and their prayers essentially went sort of unanswered in a way, because he had a better idea, because he had another idea. And I think for us, this is something that if we believe in his love and his goodness and his power, that's good. But when we struggle with then how come life is the way it is, it's important for us to remember he knows more than we do. He has a plan that's bigger than our plan. I mean, sometimes when someone dies and we would say, wow, it was premature, not only do we not really have a vision of what happens to them the moment they die and they're in the presence of God and they're happy and free and fulfilled forever, but we also don't know what might have happened to them had they not died. That they could have got sicker and worse off, or something horrible could have happened to them. Big picture, we have to realize whenever we pray, really, and I saw Timothy Keller said something like this one time. He said, when we pray, God answers the prayer that we would have prayed if we knew everything that he knows. In other words, he sees a bigger picture than we do. So when we pray, he hears that prayer as what we would ask for if we understood the larger picture, if we knew what he knows. And I think that this is one little illustration of it.
You're listening to The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. As we go through the Gospel of John together, there may come a time when you'd like to hear a message again. You can do so rather easily at thebalancedword.com or call and request a CD copy at 949-362-7475. By the way, we're making this complete series in John available to you on a thumb drive for a donation of $10 or more. Go through this powerful gospel from start to finish with Pastor Dave. Again, call 949-362-7475 and we can help you with that. Please remember, it's your support that allows us to bring the teaching of God's Word to the radio every day. Thank you for standing with us. Again, we can be reached at 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. We'd like to invite you to visit us at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Pastor Dave Rolfe teaches most weekends, and you can hear him teach the Word Sunday morning at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. He always enjoys meeting his listeners, so please say hi after the service. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. There's much more to come in our study of the Gospel of John. We'll see you next time right here on The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. This program is listener-supported and brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And